The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
US President Donald Trump has warned that all hell would break loose if every Israeli hostage is not released from Gaza within days. It's after Hamas threatened to postpone further hostage exchanges under the new ceasefire deal because it says Israel is violating its side of that deal. Here's a reminder of what Donald Trump had to say.
As far as I'm concerned, if all of the hostages aren't returned by Saturday at 12 o'clock, I think it's an appropriate time, I would say cancel it and all bets are off and let hell break out.
I'm joined by Sean Bell, who's a retired fighter pilot, current defense consultant and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast, as well as Alistair Bunkle, Sky's Middle East correspondent live from Jerusalem. And as we speak, Jordan's King Abdullah is visiting with Donald Trump at the White House. Whatever about his reaction, what's the rest of the Middle East likely to make of this, Alistair?
I mean, the Middle East has rejected this Trump proposal, apart from the Israelis, of course. There's a lot in Israel who have jumped on it, including the current government. I think it's the best plan that they've heard to date. But the Arab world in the Middle East has rejected it outright. Now, you know, that's all very well, and there's some very good reasons why they've done that. But King Abdullah, when he's in Washington meeting with President Trump today, if he's going to make any progress, he will need to come up with a demand, a plan of his own, an alternative, if you like, to what Trump is putting forward. Because at the moment, the Arab world for months has not united and come up with its own kind of future plan for Gaza, who would pay for it, who would secure it, who would rebuild it, etc. And in absence of that, there is a space, and into that space has come Donald Trump. And Benjamin Netanyahu has followed him very happily behind that.
And Netanyahu is saying that if Hamas doesn't return hostages by that deadline, the ceasefire is over and the military will return to intense fighting until Hamas is defeated.
And I think, I'm just getting the news through, that I think Netanyahu's saying 9 hostages should be returned this weekend. Now, that was not in the ceasefire agreement, but that is a response to the Hamas statement last night saying they were going to postpone the release of hostages this coming weekend. Then Donald Trump overnight said if it were him, they should release all the hostages by midday on Saturday. Otherwise, quote, all hell will break loose. And it sounds like the Israeli government is saying you're going to have to release 9 hostages this weekend. Otherwise, the war will resume. I've been speaking to people in Hamas and they insist to me they want this ceasefire to continue. They don't want to go back to the fighting. They genuinely believe that there are areas that the Israelis have not kept up their side of the bargain, particularly on the delivery of aid and certain aspects of aid. But they have given the Israelis an ultimatum, effectively, and it looks like the Israelis are going to up the stakes. And it's a case of who blinks first now.
That kind of characterization, Sean Bell, when we're talking about who's going to blink first, when we're talking about upping the stakes, when we're talking about ultimatums, it's hard to think of a peace process where language like that has led to a positive outcome.
Well, you know, Ali's much closer to this than I, but as a military guy, ceasefires only work if one side has won, the other side has lost, and you need to agree terms, or both sides are in a stalemate. And in the particular circumstances between the Israeli Defense Force and Hamas, those conditions have not been met. I think it's political pressure that's been brought to bear to get them to come to sort of some sort of agreement. I think it suited both sides to get the hostage exchange going. Prime Minister Netanyahu has been under a lot of pressure for not doing enough to release hostages, and this has got some of that criticism off his back. And Hamas, as they've been retreating into much smaller areas of Gaza, managing 100 hostages must be increasing a nightmare. But whether or not both sides are actually prepared to negotiate around phase 2, which was meant to start after 16 days to decide how you get the rest of the hostages out and a full withdrawal of Israeli forces, it's not entirely clear. And it's not clear that neither side looks to be absolutely keen on doing that. And both sides at the moment are criticizing each other. Israel admits it was slow to withdraw from the Netzarim corridor because it was it was very upset about the chaotic scenes around the release of the early set of hostages. And of course, Hamas are now delaying the hostage release as a result. I mean, all of this, unfortunately, is symptoms, the diseases, that they haven't actually solved the core problem. And I suspect that's what the Trump ultimatum is all about. He's throwing a different set of narratives on the table, knowing that they can't be acceptable, but forcing all parties to potentially start to think of alternatives, exactly as Alistair said.
And is it that, is language like Trump's, I mean, the threat of invasion, however it be done, but in invasion and ethnic cleansing of Gaza and US ownership of it, the suggestion that all hell be allowed to break loose, is that so extreme that both sides can simply dismiss it and get on with the real business of negotiating? Or does that give Israel carte blanche?
Well, I don't think it's the latter. I do think the Trump's language in a lot of different things, we could spend an hour talking about some of the things he's been talking about, not just to do with Gaza. All of this is to try to be disruptive. And in a way, what I admire about the approach is that for many decades, we've not actually solved the root problem of Gaza, which ultimately is a two-state solution of some form. And unless the world tackles that really difficult problem, we're destined to rinse and repeat what's happened tragically on the 7th of October. So I think a fresh approach is probably justified. It's going to make a lot of headlines along the way, but somehow you've got to get all the grown-ups around the table. I mean by that, you know, Saudi Arabia and some of the Middle East states, as well as some of the Western states, to try to knock Israeli and Gaza and Hamas heads together to try and find a lasting solution. It won't be easy, but frankly, efforts over the last few decades, we still keep ending up in war between the parties, and the people that suffer are the Palestinians and the Israeli population, who have paid a huge price for this latest round of conflict.
Now, Alistair, you said you had been speaking to people within Hamas. In most historical contexts that I can think of, where you had a significant global player, where you had a significant military or state actor threaten a terrorist organization and provide ultimatums like that, usually that acted as a recruiting vehicle and caused them to dig in. Is that the response that we're getting from Hamas?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of it being a recruiting factor, I mean, the war has certainly been a recruiting factor. Anthony Blinken, the former US Secretary of State, said that in one of his kind of valedictory interviews, that he thinks that there's as many people as many Hamas fighters as Israel has killed, as many has been recruited as a result of the conflict in Gaza. Hamas have been using the weekly hostage releases as a propaganda moment to parade in military uniforms, to show that they have an element of control, to show that they still have arms, to show that they're still a force. Yeah, they're not the force they were. They're a fraction of that force, but you know, they still have control over elements of Gaza, and you know, it is a failure, you know, very arguably, of Benjamin Netanyahu's, that he pursued the military objectives of the war in absence of giving much consideration to the political future of Gaza. And the military objectives are on hold at the moment, and in the case of a ceasefire. But there is no, because there's no political proposal, there's not been any political sort of thought given to who runs Gaza, how they run it. Hamas are able to emerge from the tunnels, emerge from the hiding places they've been in, and take to the streets of Gaza again and show that they still have remnants there.
Sean Bell, let me return to you. You talked about that you only get a real ceasefire, you only get a real peace at the point, a real negotiation at the point at which there is either definitive stalemate or one side has won and the other lost. If we get to the worst case scenario of military action by the Israelis restarting in the short term, what will that look like? And do they see now a more real prospect of a complete eradication of Hamas? Do they think that's feasible? Is it?
Well, firstly, it's not. I don't think you can ever get rid of Hamas. I mean, the grand strategic challenge here is obviously Hamas is a bitter, it's funded and supported by Iran. Iran's taken a bit of a pummeling over the last few months, not least of which with Hezbollah, the Houthis, its influence around the world. But Hamas is still there and surviving. If you, as a military guy, if you ask me to go back into Gaza and exterminate Hamas, it's an almost impossible mission. If you remember at the start of this, Netanyahu had two main aims: to destroy Hamas and to release the hostages. He modified destroy Hamas to take their ability to govern away and their ability to present a military threat anymore. Now, that's quite nuanced. The trouble is military action hasn't actually secured the release of hostages. It's only negotiation that has, and that's why I think we're seeing this uneasy truce at the moment. But the harsh reality is that Alistair is absolutely right. As a military guy, military action can only fulfill and create the conditions for a political solution to prevail. That has been historically the case in wars around the world. In this particular case, the West thought it was a two-state solution that was the ambition. Netanyahu's made very clear it's not, but has not stated what he sees as the alternative. And as a result, in that void, we're left with this uncomfortable situation, which unfortunately means Netanyahu might well pull the trigger to get on with military action. It bolsters his own position domestically, which is an uncomfortable situation for everyone in the West. But ultimately, you will never win this militarily. You have to do hearts and minds. There has to be a political engagement, and it has to be with the grown-ups involved. And by that, I mean people outside Israel and Hamas, because bluntly, there's visceral hatred between both sides now. It's very hard to see they'll ever come to an accommodation just between the two of them.
Well, we're getting initial reports from some of what's going on in that meeting between Donald Trump and the King of Jordan, and Trump being quoted as saying Palestinians will live safely, but not in Gaza. And the King of Jordan saying that peace is a realistic prospect in his view. With that in mind, Alistair, you talked about the people who were involved in this, whether it be Iran, whether it be the other Gulf states. America, in previous conflicts, has been seen as something of an honest broker and able to bring the parties together. I assume they're not perceived as that this time. So to who do we look to lead the peace, if there is one?
Well, at the moment, I mean, there is nobody else but Donald Trump, and he has made the running in it. And, you know, as I said, I think that's partly because of the kind of character he is, partly because, of course, as being the US president, he has the levers of power at his disposal. So, for example, he can threaten the Jordanians and the Egyptians with withdrawing financial assistance to them, which is really considerable. So, you know, he has that at his disposal. But also because the Arab states haven't joined together and come up with their own future for Gaza, as I was saying, you know, that's left a space, and into that space has come Donald Trump. So at the moment, and, you know, and we're not really hearing anything meaningful from the UK government, from the EU, from France, Germany, whatever. You know, at the moment, the person making the running, you like it or not, is Trump, and on Trump's shoulder is Benjamin Netanyahu. And it's going to be up to someone or a coalition of Arab states or and a Western alliance or whatever it might be to get serious, come to the table and say, well, look, we can't evict Gazans from Gaza at the point of a gun. How are we going to do this? Let's get around the table and think about it. But at the moment, as I say, there's no sign of anybody taking that lead.
Alistair, thank you very much. That's Alistair Bunkle, Sky's Middle East correspondent, joining us there from Jerusalem. Likewise, thank you very much to Sean Bell, retired former fighter pilot, current defence consultant, and of course, co-host of the Red Matrix podcast.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.